You're listening to the Podcast Detroit Network. Visit www.podcastdetroit.com for more information.
This is a previously recorded episode of the IT in the D Show.
Welcome. You are listening to the IT in the D Show. We have made it all the way to episode 174. This is 174, right, Dave? Last week
It is. You are actually accurate this week.
We have a Pack Jam studio. First of all, we're going to have our annual toy drive for Operation Kid Equip on December 8th at Falling Down Brewery. Just want to make sure you mark your calendars. We have the proprietor of Falling Down Beer Company, Mark Larson, is in the house.
Whoop.
We have Michael here from Operation Kid Equip talking about this amazing charity and kind of a new thing that he's doing to helping out families in the Metro Detroit area. Last but not least, Dr. Hook Jeremiah from Daily Detroit and Sven is in the house talking about some cool stuff going on in the city. So speaking of podcasts, Dave.
So hey, here's the deal. So have you ever been watching a movie and gone, well, why don't they just fix the problem like that? Well, of course. Well, then there probably wouldn't be a movie. But tech pioneer VMware said, screw that. We're going to go ahead and turn this idea into a podcast. So they dropped a couple of IT guys. What can possibly go wrong with that? Into classic sci-fi movies like Star Wars, The Matrix, The Terminator, to plug the technology plot holes. Super clever and funny. It's called IT is Greater Than Sci-Fi. And you can listen at vmware.com/radius/sci-fi or... Actually, we actually have them all cross-posted now out on the SoundCloud feed for Podcast Detroit and IT in the D. Or you can also download them from iTunes. So give them a look. It's IT is Greater Than Sci-Fi from VMware.
The following program is intended for mature audiences.
This is Max Headroom. And what you're about to witness is one of the most sinister-sounding intros to a trailer to one of the greatest epics ever.
You're listening to the IT in the D Show.
This is Billy D. Williams. Bob and Dave and I are enjoying a Colt 45 right now. And remember, IT in the D, it works every time.
Just where do you guys think you are?
The Library of Congress?
Detroit?
Beyond the Sun?
Any of those, right?
Hi, this is Jeremy London from Mallrats, and I'm just wondering, how did I go from Hot Floridian Sex with Brandy spinning to the IT and D Show?
Take him to Detroit.
No! No, not Detroit! No! No, please! Anything with that! No!
I used to hang out at the Mugumbo Bar. It was a rough place, the seediest dive on the wharf, populated with every reject and cutthroat from Bombay to Calcutta. It's worse than Detroit.
You will never find the more wretched hive of scum and villainy.
Then don't come! Shut up!
Dig, you IT geeks. This is Dre DiMatteo from Sons of Anarchy. You are listening to IT in the D.
What happens when you tap the angry beaver in the bumhole?
Exactly. Come on.
What the hell with this? I'm calling a break. We'll come back to the show.
What's up, everybody? This is Billy Zapka. Sweep the leg. Listening to IT in the D Show. No mercy.
I may have to wipe the geek off.
Hi, this is Martin Cove, John Kreese from the Karate Kid movie. And you're listening to IT in the D.
Are we at a break yet?
Hi, I'm Ernie Hudson, and you're listening to IT in the D. All you nerds out there.
Nerds!
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 What is a nerd?
I'm a nerd, and I'm pretty proud of it.
This is Scott Steiner, Big Pump Pump. IT in the D Show is your hookup. Holler if you hear me.
You're in your underwear, I'm in my underwear. Here, let's hang out.
No, I'm sorry, honey, I have a headache.
I definitely want to see Bob in his underwear, that's a fact.
I can't say no, and I don't really want to.
Well, especially with the back doors open.
It's just too big.
How big?
It's way too big.
I can get it all the way in.
Really? Should we talk about this? Tag team. Should I keep going, or should I stop?
We just lost our clean tag on iTunes.
But it's delicious.
This is Robert Hayes, Ted Stryker to my mother. When I'm not hanging out at the Mugumbo Bar, I'm listening to the IT and the D Show. It's worse than Detroit.
Is there such thing as a meat hangover?
I love my Monday meat stick.
Hey, folks, this is WWE Hall of Famer Hacksaw Jim Duggan, and you're listening to the IT and the D Show. The tough guy.
What would you little maniacs like to do first?
The question isn't what are we going to do, the question is what aren't we going to do.
Ludicrous speed! Sir, had you better buckle up? Buckle this! Ludicrous speed! Go!
Go! Welcome. Thank you for listening. This is the one and only IT in the D show. We're broadcasting here live in Studio One in Podcast Detroit in beautiful Royal Oak, Michigan. This is Bob the Sales Guy hanging out with Dave the Geek, Nuri the FNG, looking dapper tonight. Find us online.
It's going to Prohibition Day party, see?
It's a beautiful day today. Prohibition was repealed today. What, 78 years ago? 3 years ago? 5 years ago?
They say beer is both the cause of and solution to all of man's problems.
Thank you, Homer Simpson.
Thank you, Homer Simpson.
Find us online, itinthed.com. Do us a favor. Subscribe to our podcast on the iTunes and on the Google Plays.
Both of them.
And on the SoundClouds and on the Stitchers and anywhere fine podcasts
subscribe
are sold.
Early, subscribe often.
Exactly. Thank you to Randy and Ian for filling up our Twitters. You can follow us on all the socials as well, where we put stupid links and stupid pictures up, which is what we do. But hey, we have a phenomenal guest lineup tonight. Segment two, we are joined by the proprietor of Falling Down Beer Company, Mark Larson, who's been on the show many, many times and supplies the studio with delicious beer.
Many, many beers.
Right, right. Exactly. Also joined by Michael from Operation Kit Equip. We'll lead into why these two are here in a minute. And last but not least, we have Dr. Hook Jeremiah here from Daily Detroit, along with Sven, talking all things Detroit.
One of these days, we're going to need a segment five to explain that nickname.
No. No, never. We'll need a whole podcast.
It'll be a narrative show. It'll be like This American Life.
Right.
Can you do interpretive dance while you're narrating this? I will.
Mark your calendars and come see us. We are on the eve of December the 8th, our annual charity party, Christmas party.
Merry, happy Quismer Kwanzaa.
Drink party, all things party. We're going to be at Falling Down Beer Company on 10 Mile in DeQuinder, hanging out with Mr. Mark Larson himself and helping out families in need for Operation Kit Equip. We'll get to all that in segment three.
Yep.
But we are, we're all things are a go.
We are live. So, hey, let's talk about the big elephant in the room.
Me?
Well, you did eat Comet Burger later.
I did. It was yummy.
About that. So, or earlier. Tesla snuck in under the radar and opened up a showroom that's not a showroom in Nordstrom in Somerset.
So it's kind of like the Blues Brothers. Hey, new Oldsmobiles are in early this year. They opened up retail in a mall. And you remember
it's
in Nordstrom. Yeah,
it's in the kiosk. It's like a kiosk.
It's like
Nordstrom.
Behind the Shinola, past the purses, to the left of the sunglasses.
So all the dads have things to do now while the wives are trying on dresses. Usually they would just sit there with that look on their face, sitting on the.
You stuck here with a purse?
Yeah, exactly.
You can't actually buy one there, right?
No.
Basically,
no.
Just to look
at them.
They won't
even talk pricing with you.
Well, yeah,
really?
And it says not for sale all over it.
It's, you know what this is the equivalent of? You remember last year where that guy constructed that like 8-foot copper middle finger in his backyard to point at his neighbor's house?
Oh, the strip club guy.
Yes.
That owns Coliseum. And
I don't know which ones.
Markowitz. But
this is Tesla's version of the big, huge copper middle finger.
It actually is, because if you think about it, so he did that because his wife left him for his neighbor. And so he erected the 20-foot giant middle finger in his backyard, pointed at their house. So, yeah, this is literally like, what, a mile
it
down the road?
Exactly. In our story, it was exactly 1 mile
from,
down the road.
Dada, the Detroit Area Dealers Line.
I thought it was North American.
Who produces the auto show.
Okay, but it's here, Dada. It's Dada.
Fine.
Actually, it's Nada.
Fine. You're Dada. Right, exactly.
And the interesting thing about the whole thing is that it is a middle finger, because what last year Tesla applied for a Class A dealership license and basically was shot down.
And now they're suing.
And now they're right. Like the day after they sued. And it's like, well, fine. We're just going
to
go ahead.
And talking to legal experts behind the scenes, Tesla's got a shot. They've got a real shot at pulling this thing off.
Well, we know people that own Teslas. They went to Chicago to buy them.
Or to Toledo. Right?
Cleveland. Yeah. Cleveland is the next. Yeah. Cleveland, like 3.5-hour drive.
So Howard the Duck and Teslas.
Right, Cleveland. Right.
If somebody wants one bad enough, it's having a store here is not going to change things, right?
No.
Like for me, I would drive as well to find a Tesla and test drive it.
It's no different than wanting Yuengling beer or getting Coors across the Mississippi, right? It's going to be like, see, that's the modern day movie, Smokey and the Bandit.
He's browning down, yeah.
Yeah. I need me a Tesla and 10 cases of Yuengling by tomorrow morning. There's going to be
they're driving in Atlanta and there's Teslas in Texarkana.
Right, right. Exactly. But like if people watch, they're going to go get it. It's not going to stop anyone. A 3.5-hour drive is nothing. I took a 3.5 hour nap today. It was nothing.
I'm just saying. Well, and they're smart too, because it seems like they're really taking a lesson off of all the things. What have we learned in the last political election cycle? You got to talk to people, and it's going to make a difference. And when we were out there, you know, and we were talking to their guide or whatever they called it, they were definitely clear about what was happening, why you couldn't buy a Tesla. And imagine that it's basically like they've got a lobbying arm talking to average people who are all sitting there going, literally, why can't I buy this?
You cannot have it. You cannot have it. Well, I can't afford it. I can't have it.
Well, it's the pretty sweet gull wing. What is it? The Z
Model X. You can stand in the back with the gull wing because it's so tall. A 6 foot tall man can stand in the back.
It's pretty.
Well, that's like the Silicon Valley with like the doors go like this. They don't go like this. Yeah. Rich people have doors that go like
this. Rich people have doors that go up.
So speaking of cars, our friend Jordan at the Art of Charm posted on Facebook this weekend.
Yeah.
And he saw himself one of them driverless Ubers in San Francisco this weekend.
I would never get in one.
No.
It's not going to happen.
No, I thought it was bad enough in like Total Recall getting in with like that
Johnny Cab.
Johnny Cab, right? Yeah. Exactly. No. I'm not getting in Johnny Cab.
You're going to wind up again.
Ripping it out and driving yourself.
Back to Silicon Valley. You're going to wind up in a shipping container heading off to China.
Right. See, they foresee all the things. They're like the Simpsons of modern day. But like, would you get in?
No. No. It's not even a question. Yeah. No.
Because, you know, I don't know this answer to this, Neri. I don't know if you knew more. They have Pennsylvania plates. Apparently they're coming from Pittsburgh.
I wonder if that's any way to they have some kind of like legislation.
It's through Carnegie Mellon.
Oh.
So a lot of the research is being done in a partnership with the university there. And so that's why it's all coming out of Pittsburgh, is because that's where all the brains are for this.
I wonder if they give you a chance, right? So like when you call an Uber, is going to say, by the way, this is a self-driving Uber.
No, it's free. There's a whole bunch of
Yeah, when you get the little app and it's just a, hey, Bob's your driver. Hey, your driver is no one. Yeah,
blank.
Because, car pulls up without a driver. I'm looking for the punked cameras. That's what I'm doing.
Steal this car.
Like, what? I mean, again, is there cameras on you? Like, what happens if you throw up in the Uber or the driverless?
What happens if the driverless drives like an asshole and cuts people off?
Right. What happens if it gets into an accident?
You're sitting in the back seat going, I didn't do nothing.
Did you see that snowstorm in Montreal where they just kept sliding?
Yeah, all the buses.
All the buses. Imagine being in a driverless Uber in that situation. That'd be terrifying.
Well, speaking of San Francisco, did you see that ransomware hit the train system in?
Yeah, it hit the turnstiles. Yeah.
It hit the turnstiles. So basically they were, shut down?
Yeah, you could not pay to get on the public transit system.
So how did they open that thing up?
It's all free.
Until they paid the ransomware to get it opened up?
They said that they did not pay and that they actually hand-wrote signs that said free today, and the turnstiles themselves said out of order. So basically people just walk through the gates and onto the train.
We talk about that all the time with data security. Nobody thinks of those kind of endpoints as needing security.
Every endpoint needs security. Yeah. If it has an IP address.
Well, I remember. Let's not start this today. No. But when I was at Dell Security, one of our biggest customers was a parking garage company who got PCI compliant firewalls because it was they needed to lock those things down and secure them when people paid from credit card at these manless stations. But at least they had the foresight to see this. Who knows what this train station had in terms of data security?
Well, San Francisco, you think the city of San Francisco would be pretty good at it. I'd hope they would.
Yeah.
They had it back online in one day, so obviously they did something right. So restore from backup or whatever. But speaking of things that get infected by things, pretty random, right? Did you guys see the cable modems over in Europe right now getting impacted by the Mirai botnet?
Yeah.
So the same botnet.
And the D-Link routers. Yep.
Yeah, exactly. It's like Zyzel or something.
It's like the crap brand at Walmart.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And so apparently there were over 1 million customers in Europe impacted with this botnet because of an open port and a default password. So apparently it scans 61 default passwords and can basically break into anything sitting on the internet that hasn't had its password changed.
Well, yeah, because they're always either blank or admin or tech.
Yeah. Or, right. Yeah, exactly.
Who changes their ISP router? No one.
The first thing I do.
This is your cable modem, though. The ISP should.
Yeah.
It should have some kind of good password rotation.
Not everyone has a personal Dave.
Everyone should.
No, because if you ask him to fix it, he'll go, I'll see you in 6 years.
Turn it off and back on again and call
exactly.
me back.
Exactly.
Have you rebooted it?
But you have no idea, Jeremiah, the pain that I have to go through in my life to fix it myself before I call Dave. A, for the mocking that he's going to say, you stupid, you don't know how to change your password. And then, like, to get him to come over the house is, like, at least, like, 4,700 filet mignons.
Yeah, I was thinking to myself, it's clear that you don't give him enough booze when he comes over.
Oh, no, there's plenty of booze. Wait, but it's like the meme we put on our Facebook page. Like the doctor's like, I can't give advice outside the office. Oh, by the way, can you look at my laptop?
Yeah, my laptop's running a little slow.
Right.
One of our favorite international stories, the Japanese people can be weird story that hit this week.
Can be?
Can be, yeah. So apparently they opened up a skating rink that has 5,000 fish in the ice. And apparently, like, PETA lost their minds at first, and then they explained, well, no, we went to the fish market and bought the non-food-grade fish and put those fish. It's not like they had living fish that they then put in and froze. Because if you see it, it's like they're all in formation, like they were swimming around in schools and stuff. So, like, you know, it looks like they were flash frozen.
It's art. It's absolutely art.
It looks ridiculous.
It also creeped out all the children.
Oh, yeah. The kids were freaked out.
So you don't eat them afterwards?
No, they're frozen in the ice.
Then what's the big deal?
Because animal cruelty and it was.
Can't you just put rubber ones in there? Why do they have to put real fish?
So apparently they did with like the manta rays and that kind of stuff. They're in there. Those are just pictures. That are frozen in there, but all the fish are fish.
You think with like laser, like did like pick, you could just like shoot movies like
3D print a fish. Yeah,
play Finding Dory.
Aren't there fatheads for these things?
You would think.
Damn Japanese.
That one just blew my.
So
we trip over like a little fish sticking out of the ice. Like if it wears down a little bit.
Oh, that would be my whole goal. Would be like keep doing the hockey stop.
Thaws,
oh, that'd be gross. Yeah.
That'd be horrible.
Yeah.
It would just get worse and worse and be all contained because, you know, ice ranks are like.
And then they have a sale on sushi on Friday.
Oh, yeah, because you know how it happens. Yeah. So how much are you looking forward to the Cheetos quesadilla making it stateside, Bob?
Do I have it? Can I have it now?
It's only in the Philippines.
I'm driving to the Philippines tomorrow. I'm driving all the way.
I wonder what Easter egg that would unlock in Google Maps.
So what is it? Hold on. What is a Cheetos quesadilla?
It's a Cheetos crusted quesadilla.
A quesadilla. See, we tried the Burger King cheese thing. Those are horrible.
Oh yeah, those were not good.
I don't care.
The mac and cheese.
Yeah,
things?
Yeah, no,
those were not amazing.
Doritos shell good.
Yeah,
Cheetos quesadilla.
I wonder what the nutritional value is of that. Actually,
none. Nutritional value, no value, none.
Exactly. Yeah. It's
minus 400, yeah, is what I'm thinking.
Does Cheetos like ship like bags of like Cheeto powder? Is that how that works? Is that even a thing?
That
like
stuff cause cancer in lab rats?
It's all reconstituted like Cheetos powder. It's like
someone's job
Cheetos
is
are, like,
to
the MDF of like the snack world.
Someone's job is to engineer Cheeto powder.
Like, or they
to
make have child it. Labor where they have like small mouths.
I believe that more than I believe that.
Yeah. Or just give the kids bags and let them mess with them for a couple hours. Yeah. And then you have Cheeto dust. You know, we're huge fans. Well, not a huge. We're fans of the whole medical marijuana thing. You know, I think we're all in favor of it here.
I'm actually the huge fan of the room, but
yeah.
Right.
Well, you're not necessarily a huge fan of medical marijuana.
He has so many conditions, Dave. So many.
But I had to sit back and question this one. Apparently, there's one doctor in the state of Michigan who certified 11,800 patients this year.
Wait, let me math. How many was that?
You know, there's actually some really interesting.
20.
Math.
That's 200 a week.
Yeah.
So in 2011, the average, you had to basically see 18 patients per day, work 240 days a year, and then you'd only have 2,160 patients. That's it. That's 18 people a day, 2,160.
Well, we go to Hamtramck a lot.
And he was 5X that.
Yeah. We go to Hamtramck a lot, and I remember like there was like an outpatient place, and there was 20, 30 people out in line. It was almost like Punchki Day. And I'm like, and I asked my wife, and I go, what is that? She goes,
no,
oh my God.
After you smoke the
right. Right. She goes, that's one of those quack doctors. He's handing out pain scripts.
Yeah, here's your $200. Here's your script.
Actually,
yeah.
There are dispensaries in town that actually have doctors that come into their office. So, like, you could actually go into the dispensary, see advanced? A quote like doctor.
A quote doctor.
And get a quote marijuana card. And,
so that, speaking of certified and purchase.
And buy it right then because they trust a doctor. And then they'll actually, without a card, they're going to go ahead and give you pot right there at the store.
Well, it's funny how society changes. And it's since it's Prohibition Repeal Day, one of the things I bought for my wife, she's a physician assistant. Right. She writes scripts for pain medicine. Doctors during Prohibition would prescribe whiskey, rum, vodka, gin. And so I have like an original slip from like 1931, like for a doctor prescribing booze as an ailment cure.
So have you ever brought that to CVS just for kicks?
Yeah, exactly. I'll take the Kraken. Did they have Kraken back then? Like, they should have. But you talk, you know, you're going through the whole experiment with cutting the cord. And we talk about this all the time.
Yeah, and I'm actually at the point where the boxes are going back. I've got all the TVs all cured up. Everything's all Roku'd up and ready to go. And
but if you think you're sticking it to the man.
This made me so sad.
Someone ran through and did the math.
And we hate when people, we love it when we're the ones that do math. We hate it when other people do the math.
And I don't think that you think you're sticking it to the Comcast and you're kind of not.
It's,
I think they're kind of laughing at you.
$5.
They lose five bucks
when you cut the cord. When you
it's
get
not even
cable.
Worth the price of the cord that you've cut.
Right.
Yeah, exactly. The HDMI cable I bought for the Roku box was more expensive than $5.
Does
yeah.
that account into, though, the carrier fees that networks sometimes pay?
Yep.
Okay. All of it.
Because like the mathing that they did was the whole.
I love how mathing's a verb
it
now.
Is now. It's like summer. We summer in the. Yeah. Now we math. It was the, you know, the people that return their cable boxes tend to bump up their cable modem speed. And even without bumping up.
And then the price goes up anyway.
Well, and even without bumping up the cable modem speed, because you're unbundling, the price goes up. And so, yeah, it all nets out that you're costing them $5, which made me sad because, yeah, it's now it's almost like a, now keep the box.
Go ahead. Cut the cord. See if I care.
Well, yeah.
And depending on what you want to do, you can't cut the cord completely like sports.
Well, so. You can get the Sling app on the Roku, and then you've got a lot of the sports channels as well as all the local access channels.
By the time Chromecast you cut Comcast, then you add Roku, add Sling, add Hulu Plus, add Netflix. You're almost paying the same as you would have paid with not
minus. So actually, because that was part of all this, I did the math. Minus the dropping the cable boxes, and even with the subscriptions and all that stuff that I've added, still nets out at over $100 cheaper. And that's with the cable modem and all that fun
per
stuff.
Per year, per month.
Per month.
Whoa.
I could see where this could really start to add up if you have like multiple TVs, if you have five or six boxes.
I do.
Okay. Yeah, I just have one.
I got the keys.
I'm four HD DVRs.
Yep.
I don't. It's not cheap in my house.
Wow.
Well, and now
that's a whole different world than the one I live in.
Oh yeah. Well, so and now you know now that you know that baby TV is available on the Roku. that was his big cord cutting holdback because the baby would annihilate his entire house.
Burn the house down. if there isn't that. Oh my God, that's a worse channel. Whoever, I don't even know how people could sit and make like we talk about writing TV stuff and all that. This is the funny thing. Can I talk about this real quick?
It's your podcast.
If I say no, does it really matter?
Like baby TV, they have a segment.
Wait, this is a network?
Yes.
I thought you were talking about like your child
no.
being upset or
no,
something.
No, no, no.
It's a network.
It's a network.
Baby TV.
But they have one segment there where they talk about food. And like the Italian guy is like, hey, I make a da pasta. And he talks like that.
It's the family guy. Boopity, beepity, yeah. boppity, boopity.
No, seriously. And then here's the Mexican guy with a sombrero with the accent. And here's like the Japanese guy with the eyes and like a caricature with the accent. I go, how do they get away with putting this for like 2-year-old kids?
Dude, if we did that at our age, we'd be assassinated.
Seriously.
You'd be on Flashpoint again.
I'll find it on YouTube and send it to you. It's insane. Speaking of YouTube, I just found out something. Like one of my ideas I had, like I always had, we go to the bar and get drunk and come up with stupid business ideas. I always thought it'd be cool to have like a 7-Eleven unmanned, which is vending machines, right? Where you walk in, swipe card, and you just 24 hours unmanned, just buy what you want and get the hell out.
Yeah.
All right. You can't have whatever. So Amazon for 4 years has been writing code almost similar to the self-driving car code, where they have a 7-Eleven style store where you walk in, scan your app as you walk in. It's unmanned. You buy your things. You walk out. It gets billed to your Amazon account. It's called Amazon Go. And they just opened their first one in Bellevue.
Yes, please.
And yeah, everyone's got their little their reusable bag, and they put their shit in the bag.
See, the
and then there's no lines, no cashiers, no checkouts, no coupons.
The only thing that worries me about that is so like Pennsylvania has like automated booze kiosks that you can go to. You can go and like buy a bottle of wine or, you know, get bottles or whatever else you want to get. The thing I don't like about them whenever I've been there is that you've got to because obviously it's an age verification thing. So you've got to like swipe your ID kind of like you do a credit card, you know, and then you're in a database that you are, you know, what and you know me. I don't like – so I'm curious as to where all that data goes and what they do.
So they showed like someone taking something off the wall, putting it back on the wall, taking it off the wall again. And it knows when you've taken it off the wall. It knows when you've looked at something.
When you've been sleeping.
Yeah.
It knows when you're awake.
Totally. Santa Claus is coming to town.
So it's not RFIDs, basically.
It's not RFID because Walmart tried to do the RFID thing, and they realized that it was more expensive. Yeah, especially for low cost, low margin. It's low margin. Groceries, low margin anyway. This is machine learning. Basically video. It knows your eye patterns. It sees when you like look at something for more than 3 seconds and not buy it. And why didn't you buy it? Was the price too high? It shows when you grab something and put it back. And there's analytics and big machine learning. I don't even know half the crap that goes into this, but they know everything about you. It's worse than Minority. This is way worse than Minority Report going, good morning, Mr. Phillips. Would you like to buy another?
Your 30-pack of PBR and Slim Jims are located at aisle 3.
Is it any different than going to Meijer and then punching in your like Imperks number? It's basically the same damn thing.
No, but they're following your behavior patterns.
Well, I mean, they do on video anyway. I mean,
yeah, but no one – it's not going into analytics databases, Jer, with your eye patterns and what you grab.
I think that – I mean –
there's tracking on your cell phone where they know like your foot patterns,
right.
But it doesn't show your behavior patterns. This is getting it to another level.
It's going to happen, and it's just the way things are going to be because there is so much money that flows through groceries. But if you can change just 1% of margin with something like this, and you could definitely
it's millions
do more than
of 1%, dollars. Yeah,
you're talking about millions and millions of dollars. It's like this is something that I feel like in certain areas of the country, this is just going to happen. Now, there's going to be some areas of the country where you can't do this.
It's going to be big cities,
especially areas
it's big
where
city
you
only. It's
where you can't where basically the population has to use cash.
It's Manhattan. It's big city.
Bellevue's like basically a suburb of Seattle.
Yeah,
Expedia is. It's super affluent.
You're not. It's not going to be in Des Moines. You're not going to see this
South
in like
Chicago.
Rural. No, you're not going to see this in rural Texas.
Yeah, middle of nowhere, New Hampshire won't be getting these anytime soon.
So, Nuri, you fly a lot.
I do.
Are you going to be using air dates anytime soon?
I was just going to say, remember like a year ago when we talked about that weird, creepy car date app that was out?
Which one was that?
So that was the one that would, based on Bluetooth proximity in your connected cars, would let you make a connection with a driver in a car near you.
Oh, I'd rather tell him to kiss my ass. I don't want to talk to him.
Oh, yeah. So that was our whole thing. Was, right. No, we're not using it to flirt. We're using it to tell people
you
to
drive
F
like
off.
Shit.
Yeah.
I hate you.
Get the F out of my way.
What are these guys who came in our show last year who had an app where it allow you to do that in public, like at grocery stores and things like that?
They came to PenguinCon and we killed their app. Yeah,
yeah, exactly. I don't know. I just kind of like the old school way of like getting really drunk and awkwardly hitting on the person next to me in my airplane. But,
happened.
But now there's air dates.
Air dates.
So what is it like? Okay, so did you go? Did you sneak around through this? What is it?
Oh, so it's basically a proximity-based dating thing.
Proximity. You're on a plane for crying out loud.
Well, and so that it's a really tight proximity. You know, it's not like you're in here and there's someone in that studio and someone in that studio and someone maybe in the rub and tug.
But are you gambling though that they bought the in-flight Wi-Fi go-go?
I think they said that it actually would work on peer-to-peer Wi-Fi, which all phones are capable of.
Nobody's logging into peer-to-peer Wi-Fi on planes.
But you can detect a Bluetooth that there's somebody nearby. You don't even have to connect. You can see that they're there.
But you have it in airplane mode, and all that crap's turned off.
But if you're the kind of person that's using this app, you're not going to have it locked down. You're going to have it open because you're looking to make that kind of a connection.
And so the one other weird dude in first class.
Right.
Yeah, exactly. He's the only person you're going to find. I don't think people are going to adopt that. That's just too weird.
See, you know what's funny? When
everyone's trying to redo dating apps, like so many of them, that it seems like – has this gotten to the point where there's nothing more to add to it, right?
Because when they found out Farmers Only makes money, then everyone collectively said, God damn it, I'm writing an app.
Well, what's interesting, like some airlines, I think KLM does. When you log into KLM, you can connect it to Facebook and it will show you who else has done the same thing. So it's like, oh, I'm sitting next to this person. That's cool. And then you go creepily stalk their profile.
See,
creepily hit on them later.
Did you ever – so last time I was in Germany, they had all the behind the seat, like all the different on-demand and all the games and everything. And we all end up like being friends with everyone, telling everyone to play trivia at the same time.
You can talk
and
to
then,
people.
Yeah, right? And you could, well, then showed you what seats were answering. So, like, if someone got it right and you're like, oh, yeah, I hate you. And, like, they're
18 beat and kiss my ass.
Yeah, no, but it became like this social thing where, like, we talked to people we wouldn't normally talk to.
Dude, on a plane, I just want to put on my noise canceling headphones and just not talk to anybody.
So that, I don't know. For some reason, that flight was, there's a lot of servicemen and, like, our whole row was all Army guys. So we're like, hey, what movie you guys want to watch? We're like, I don't know, let's watch 300. And we would all watch the same movie on the back screen, like, at the same
Sparta!
Time. And then we'd all talk about it after. No, it was this weird, like, I've never had a flight. Most of the time, it's, that's, yeah, weird. I put on my headphones and zot out. But I'm not picking up a, there's, the girls don't want to get talked to on a plane. They don't want to get talked to anywhere because there's idiots going.
Yeah, you think it's creepy when a guy walks up to you in a bar.
Yeah. Hey, 18D, sup.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, you have no out.
About this, though, it said that only women could initiate first contact, which basically ensures their app will never get used on an airplane.
Ever.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah.
And you're done.
And you're done.
So hey, we're going to take a quick break. We're going to be back with Mark Larson, proprietor of Falling Down Beer Company. This is the IT in the D show, and we will be right back.
IT in the D. Read. Meet. Listen. Networking Detroit, one beer at a time.
Hey, this is John Schneider from Nip Tuck Smallville, the haves and the have-nots. Oh, Dr. Quinn, hot in Cleveland. Secret Life of the American Teenager and just about everything you can possibly imagine. And oh, yeah, the Dukes of Hazzard. You're listening to Bob and Dave. It's the IT in the D show.
ITinTheD.com.
This is a previously recorded episode of the IT in the D show.
Welcome back. This is segment two, episode 174 of the IT and the D show, sitting here in Podcast Detroit, beautiful Royal Oak, Michigan. This is Bob, the sales guy.
So we have
to
specify that now because we do have the Penobscot building.
We do. And we're not there now, though. We're in Royal Oak now. So
yes.
We're in Royal Oak. But we can be in Detroit if we wanted to be, but we're not.
You can see Russia from here.
Can.
We could see Canada from there.
And there's a witch downstairs in the Penobscot.
So that's, good.
That's the only reason why Bob wants to go there ever.
So good.
This.
Hey, Bob, we're going to go down and set stuff up. Oh, all right, man. I'll be there. It's like the only time he's ever been early for anything.
Well, you get there.
Everything.
All the things.
Yeah.
All the things of a witch.
I think we've made it through. I know. I've made it through three. You must have made it through more than that.
When you go to a sub place, do you say, okay? do you look at the menu? This is Bob the Sales Guy hanging out with Dave the Geek, Nuri, the FNG. Find us online, itinthed.com.
All the things. So, hey, this segment is sponsored by Indeed Prime. Indeed Prime is a premium talent platform that matches elite tech talent to top companies. Indeed Prime helps software engineers simplify their job search and land their dream job. Candidates get immediate exposure to the best tech companies with just one simple application. And when you're hired, Indeed Prime gives you a $2,000 bonus to say thanks for using Prime. But if you use our link, and this is awfully damn cool, you get a $5,000 bonus instead. So, just for using our link instead of just going to Indeed, you go to Indeed.com/IT, you get an extra $3,000 if you get a job. Not a terrible thing.
Don't say we never gave you anything.
Yeah, exactly. So sign up now at Indeed.com/IT. Indeed Prime is 100% free for candidates. Helps hiring managers discover available high-quality talent. Again, learn more at Indeed.com/IT.
If you get a job at Indeed and get $5,000, you're buying.
Via Indeed.
You're buying.
Oh, you're buying all the things.
Right.
We expect a nice big fat check at our charity event.
Yes.
We expect the bar tab to go to you.
Yes.
Yes. All the things all the time.
It's
just be warned. And we'll know. We'll find out.
So we are.
Don't think we won't.
So, hey, we are joined by one of our original friends of the program. I think you were on episode 3-ish or something.
Four.
Mark Larson is in the house from Falling Down Beer Company. How the heck are you?
Awesome. How are you?
Good. So if anyone doesn't know the story or the history, and we always say you're living our lives and we hate you for it.
He's living our dream. Yeah.
Is you were an old IT guy. Actually, we used to work together back in like 99. You were the engineer that hated the sales guy. I was the sales guy that begged the engineers to talk to me.
Used to lock the door on you.
They did. They locked the door so we couldn't get in the engineering room. They hated us so bad. But you went and kind of went off and said, I'm going to brew beer. Like, this is even before like the craft thing even kicked. So you were like pretty much like a week before the whole movement started and started Falling Down Beer Company.
Yeah, it was an interesting time working from home. I got to be able to experiment with my home brews while I was on the computer working for
IT.
It's the beauty of Citrix, right? Work from anywhere.
That's right. It's all virtual.
Exactly. But, you know, dump in a bag of mash and then log into Citrix.
Exactly. You know. Kick off that job and check the yeast concentrate. Yeah. Yep. But no, so I mean, it's, you know, so Falling Down is over at 10 and Quinder in Warren. We've always loved the place. In fact, I think we had an event there literally the day you got your occupancy license.
Yes.
That was three years ago now. Oh, yeah, because you
over yeah, four. Say, we're yeah. going to be – March will be 5 years.
That's right. Oh, God. Crazy. Yeah, and then there's more. Like, so, I mean, you know, we're always sending people over there. You know, we always tell people, you know, grab a growler, do whatever. And I just wound up giving away a couple growlers this weekend. Ruben egg rolls. That will change your life. That's if you don't believe us, just try them. But now you guys are expanding, which is awesome to hear. You're opening up another facility in Oxford.
Yeah, we're exploding right now. So we're hoping Oxford to be open to the public sometime around February or March. We're literally just waiting on paperwork from the state and the federal government now.
Gotta love those.
Yeah, but, you know, we're basically sold out. Everything we produce currently is already sold. So we actually run short on beer at the brewery, and we're just trying to stay above the waterline, you know.
Yeah, I've no. Well, and that's, you know, because I stop by every now and then, you know, to swap out the kegs or just to hop in and grab some Reuben egg rolls, that kind of stuff. And it, number one, I love the improvements you guys have made to the place. The digital board is nice just to make it, you know, nice and clean and easy to keep track of stuff and what's there. It's kind of got that. I don't know if you've put the. I haven't been there in a couple of weeks. I don't know if the ceiling's back in yet, but it's kind of got that open feel to it now.
Yeah, ceiling's not going back in, but, you know, you can see that we strung lights up to give it kind of an outdoor beer garden feel on the inside.
Very cool. But yes, I mean, it's always been a fun hang of a place. Yeah. So, is Oxford going to have the same kind of feel, or?
So Oxford's going to be completely like rustic farmer feeling.
Okay.
So it's going to be a lot of wood, a lot of old fashioned stuff. We're going to have, we're working with the Oakland County Museum. We're going to have pictures of downtown Oxford from the old days when there was a trolley that went through Oxford down to Pontiac.
Oh, wow.
On the walls and stuff like that. We're having a custom-built bar, 100% wood. It's going to be wood floors. It's, you know, it's going to be pretty elegant. We're going to mason jar lights and stuff like that.
Are the beers available at Oxford going to be any different than your beers at your flagship store? Or?
Yeah. So you'll be able to get both at either. We'll have specialty beers that are only available at one location versus the other. But our primary production will be moving to Oxford. So they give you kind of a depth of scale. So in Warren, we can brew about 400 barrels of beer, a barrel being 31 gallons.
And that's how often? Is that every month? Or
we brew once a week.
Well, once a week. Wow.
We brew 310 gallons once a week. Give you an idea. Oxford is quadruple that.
Wow.
So Oxford's going to be right around 1,600 barrels the first year.
You guys are blown up. I mean, I've seen you like last summer at the Ipsy Beer Festival. So you guys are out everywhere. I see your stuff everywhere. I'm so happy that you guys are doing so well. And I guess it was time to, expand from a public perspective and also from a facility.
One of the guys that was here this weekend, Saturday on Shot of History. I was in here with them, and I had like 8 growlers left from the last that were, you know, we had cleaned them out and everything from the last thing we did over at Activate for the podcaster meetup. And I keep meaning to give them to people, and I keep forgetting. And I was yakking with those guys, and the guy's like, "Oh my god!" He's like, "I've seen them at, you know, this beer festival and this beer festival today," and I've never gotten there. And I'm like, "Okay, well here's a growler. Go get it filled."
Exactly. And so we're actually been able to hire our own salesperson now, so we don't have to rely on distributors.
Really?
So yeah, we're making a push right now to go statewide in Michigan, and then we've also got distributors lined up for Ohio, Indiana, and Florida. So we're gonna go multi-state here this year.
It's an interesting mix. Exactly. Ohio, Indiana, Florida. Like
a Florida man had some falling down beer today.
And so yes. Yeah, so it's interesting. We actually have a really high demand in Florida, and it's from Michigan transplants.
Snowbirds, right. Yeah.
Yeah. And I got a tweet yesterday from a beer blog in Florida who was going through our names and said these are the coolest names on the planet, and started putting them on his Florida beer blog.
Cool.
Mark's still thankful that we haven't named any of his beers.
Well, it kept him from getting sued by Lucasfilm.
Yeah. Right. Part, yeah.
Now, you say that. It's really interesting. Like, where I grew up was in a tiny little town in rural Florida, and they opened up a hipster beer place, which is just completely out of character for everything Florida. And they had Zombie Killer. And I'm like, what is going on?
How did this happen?
And I wondered about that. Now I understand it's the Michigan-Florida connection that people come down from Michigan and want.
Yeah, Pony Dog places all over the place down there. Jets
hockey
Pizza.
Teams.
Yeah,
Hungry Howie's, right? Yeah. I'm like, yeah, exactly.
Yeah, Bells and Founders is blowing up down there.
So what are some of the things that – what's something that you've learned in this time that maybe would help other folks through this process?
He's not going to tell them.
Yeah,
that.
No kidding.
You mean like other startup breweries?
Or just startups in general, like the general thing, because there's so many people who want to do something local, you know, whether it's like a candle shop or a whatever it is made local. Local is a really big thing. What is it that has helped you kind of – what do you think has helped set you apart where you've been able to find like a lot of success?
Well, first and foremost, and I think the beer industry is a little different from other industries, is – getting to know the other breweries and becoming friends with all the other breweries.
Your Facebook post, it's kind of interesting. Like, if you're not checking in at a festival, you're probably checking in at another brewery.
Yes, and I'm meeting the brewers and I'm meeting the owners and we all hang out. And there's actually a group of brewers that are just Southeast Michigan. We get together once a month and just go to a brewery all together.
See, and we keep trying to do that in the podcast industry, and people keep telling us to F off.
Yeah. Yeah, and like I said, it's very industry specific. And I bring it up because when we started over 4 years ago, the Koonin brothers,
yep,
who's our nearest big competitor, came in and helped us set our system up.
That's crazy.
That's huge.
Right. They're like, we want the whole industry to be successful.
See, it's not – why don't people believe it when we say it?
I – don't, yeah. But now, well, because they're not drunk when we say that's the whole key to this beer good.
And I bring it up because so we were the 128th brewery in Michigan. Now Michigan's over 300.
I remember it's like between episode 4 and 69. I remember that conversation where like we got into those licensing conversations where, yeah, I mean, even then, like, you were 128 and there were over like closing in on 200 in that pretty short period of time. And it was like, wow.
There's like something like 40 opening in 2016, another 40 scheduled for 2017.
When does it hit critical mass?
Well, exactly. And well, in my point was being all these are all home brewers. Which I was a home brewer.
Yeah.
But they're all like, okay, we can make beer and compete with all these people, and they're finding money or whatever, and they're just opening a little shop. They won't talk to anybody. They don't want your advice. They don't want you to help you. You go over there and go, hey, I heard you're coming to town, you know? What's up? What are you doing? Oh, you're my competitor. I don't want to talk to you. And it's a weird dynamic right now.
Now see, that's what we get.
Yeah.
The only guy in the media world you get is me.
It's all these new breweries in the last – it's just been the last year or so.
Interesting.
This big wave of breweries.
Well, it is. I mean, and that's my question with the whole industry. I mean, it's got to hit critical mass at some point. I mean, like, I do – I think there's room for a lot of places to have, you know, instead of maybe like a neighborhood bar, a neighborhood brew pub, great, and that's fine. But – it's hitting such a level of saturation on the market where it's, you know, everything's a craft brew. And oh, by the way, now you've got macro breweries that have bought micro breweries. And can you really, like, do you really know that label is a micro brew?
But I also think there's been an overall shift in consumption. Last year was the first year that people spent more money on food and drink going out than for groceries. And so there's a whole shift going on in consumption with how people are spending their money. We've got a story running later this week about grocerants, where this trend of like grocery stores and restaurants kind of put together.
I hate that word, by the way.
It's awful. A grocerant.
Oh, but it's word needs to die.
That's the official industry term. I'm using the industry term. I didn't come up with it. But it's this whole trend. It's moving towards people are consuming things in a different way, and beer is one of those things.
Well, and that makes sense. I mean, one of the things we always said, you know, that set you apart from places like Dragon Meat, although, I mean, they've tweaked it since then, but, you know, that you guys weren't just a brew pub. You had phenomenal food. you know, and still do. I mean, and that's one of those things that, you know, set Falling. I think that's one of the things that set Falling Down apart was it wasn't just, you know, go in, you know, as Bob likes to say, have three beers and not be able to burp.
I can't with craft beer. It drives me nuts.
But, you know, it's also the food and everything else that goes along with it.
Yeah, and I think it's situational. So in Warren, we're coming into a very highly competitive environment. None of the breweries around us had food. So we saw food as our advantage. That was, okay, we want everybody to go to all the breweries, but wind up at our place and have a burger.
Yep.
Oxford's a different story. So downtown Oxford's got 14 restaurants. And if you don't know Oxford, it's one block.
Yeah.
There's only one cross street. There's two blocks. That's
I don't even know
it.
Where Oxford is.
And there's like 14 restaurants.
It's up past Pine Knob.
Oh, it's past Orion.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Orion, sorry.
Orion.
Yeah.
It just
hashtag
by the Little
not
Dipper.
Michigan, right? Yes,
it's over by the Little Dipper.
All right. Yeah. Cool.
Wow. So there, we're not starting with food. We've partnered up with restaurants on the same side of the street as us, and they're going to deliver food in.
Awesome. Smart. Awesome.
So our little quadrant is all going to be about food and beer together.
Very cool.
And we're all connected with a public parking lot behind us and everything. It's really a cool situation.
Very nice. I mean, so and it's but you're not just sticking with beer there, from what I gather.
Correct. We pulled a brewery license, a winery license, and a distiller license.
Woohoo! Ooh. Yeah. Ooh.
So when we open in February, we're going to open with beer, cider, and wine, and then we're hoping by the middle to the end of 2017, we're going to open a distillery in there.
Still waiting for our meat stick beer, Dave.
Oh, I forgot about that.
We've been only talking about that since he started.
For like 4 years.
Right. I can finally do it.
Although
I did
try the what was it? The new beer that's got habanero in it.
Blazing Beaver?
Yes. Yeah, it was Nice Beaver, Angry Beaver, Blazing Beaver. phenomenal, because I loved the smoked wheat, the cracked pepper one.
Wheat.
Cool whip.
Wheaten.
Exactly. But this one had even more of a kick to it. It was really, really cool.
Yeah, it actually had Carolina Reapers and ghost pepper in it.
Oh, so good. I love that kind of stuff you guys do. So I guess which begs the question, so what's going to be on tap for people to look forward to on Thursday night?
I have a few surprises.
We're going to get our meat stick beer today.
Dun, dun, dun.
Have you had the 7 Goat Army yet?
Yes.
Yes.
Yes. Well, no, we've had the 5 here. I don't know if we had the 7 here.
There's more goats?
Yes. There's more goats. Oh. It's even more greatest of all time.
Yeah. I thought I had it at the bar one day, but
it's like new and improved
if
tide.
If it was when I saw you there, that was the 5 Goat.
Okay, cool. I've had only 5 goats.
The 5 Goat Army is our West Coast IPA with 5 different hops in it. The 7 Goat Army is an Imperial IPA with 7 different hops in it.
Oof.
See, that makes sense. It's not like tied now with more soap. How do you put more soap into soap? Hops, I understand.
Put more kinds of soap in the soap.
Right. So
it's a 10% beer, but it tastes like, I don't know, citrus and pine and deliciousness.
Reminds me, we got to set up that code with Uber.
Uber. Yeah, exactly. I'm not driving Thursday.
Got to do that before Thursday.
Not driving Thursday. But hey, speaking of that, you know, we said mark your calendars, but December 8th, we're going to be there from 5 o'clock until question mark, teeing up our next guest. We're going to be helping out Operation Kid Equip, and so it's all got charity behind it. It's our annual, we call it a toy drive, but we're helping out families that are displaced and homeless. So even though we're going to be getting drunk out of our minds, we're going to be trying to help out families less fortunate. So you know, beer for
every now and then we try to do something good.
Yeah, exactly.
Karmic burn off.
Right, right. But Mark, you know, and one of the things, Jared, we talked about, what did Mark do different? I'll answer that for you because from an outsider's perspective, Mark did an awesome job of just worrying about the beer. Like you got shit in the beginning because it was like an old family diner and it still had the booths up and it's like, it looks like a ram's horn. I don't care. I'm making beer.
Wasn't my mother's place? Yeah. Your mother's place? Yeah.
What about my – don't we talk about
Yeah,
my
your
mother.
Mama's place. Yeah.
But he not only that, built the community and those two things that set him up over and above. And what I saw is practically borderline genius. Like just – instead of just opening up and trying to tweak it and make it perfect and this like weird – you know, it just –
Oh, what was that one review we read on Meatball
or just, you know, wait until you've got, you know, the $50,000 you need to go ahead and refinish the interior. We're like, yeah, you find $50,000 and refinish that,
that's what makes exactly. Because that's what makes the beer taste better is the ambiance and the lighting in the corridors. Kiss my ass. Mark, where do we find you online? Forgot his URL.
Yeah. FallingDownBeer.com.
Yeah.
Twitter is /FallingDownBeer. Facebook /FallingDownBeer. Instagram /FallingDownBeer. Yeah, it's pretty consistent.
One of the best logos in the business and a phenomenal beer, if you don't mind me saying.
Thank you.
Mark Larson, appreciate the time, and we look forward to hanging out with you on Thursday night. We're going to be back from with Michael from Operation Kit Equip talking about the charity we'll be supporting.
Yep.
This is the IT and the D show, and we'll be right back.
IT and the D. Read, meet, listen. Networking Detroit. One beer at a time.
Hi, I'm Brittany Daniel from The Game, and you're listening to IT in the D Show.
ITinTheD.com.
This is a previously recorded episode of the IT in the D Show.
Welcome back, segment 3, episode 174. This is the IT in the D Show, and if you haven't figured it out by now, we're broadcasting here in Podcast Detroit. Beautiful Royal Oak, Michigan. It's Bob the Sales Guy. Captain Soundboard Dave the Geek, Nuri the FNG with his dapper hat on and his bow tie. Did you tie that yourself or is that a clip-on?
No, I tied it myself.
Wow.
There's a guy on YouTube that taught me how to tie a bow tie.
That's the thing. No one can learn anything anymore. Just go on YouTube. Every time now a kid says, Dad, how do I just go on YouTube?
How do I do electricity? How do I do plumbing?
Go on YouTube.
Is it a politician who teaches that tutorial?
No.
Carson Tucker or whatever?
He doesn't wear them anymore.
Apparently. Oh, he doesn't?
No.
It's actually a guy from the 1920s with a YouTube channel.
You put it on anything, see? But hey, we had a fun chat with Mark Larson from Falling Down, and we're talking about the charity event. And what a nice tie. The guests actually make sense this week, Dave, for once in our lives.
We actually kept a theme.
Right. There's usually no theme. It's like roller derby girls, and hey, there's our rocket scientist that wrote code. Like, you know. But hey, we're joined by Michael from Operation Kit Equip. And thanks for hanging out with us.
Thanks.
Appreciate it.
So we've known you for a couple years now.
More than a couple.
Yeah. And so like one of the things that I think is interesting, and we were just yakking about this outside. We usually, you know, I always wind up having the conversation, okay, well, what does this have to do with, you know, the holiday season and all that kind of stuff? And I said, okay, well, here's the, you know, Operation Kit Equip. I said, I'm sure you're familiar with, you know, the backpack drives and everything that everybody else does, you know, for school supplies and that kind of stuff in the summer. Like, oh, yeah. Totally. I'm like, yeah. Well, I said, well, go figure. Those same kids are in those same situations come holiday time. And so it's not necessarily the most festive of occasions then.
Right.
So, yeah, we try to help. And so and then now you've got another component that you're adding on. So talk to me a little bit about the evolution of Operation Kit Equip and what you guys have done and are doing and are looking to do.
Well, when Operation Kit Equip started, we started with providing school supplies for kids who didn't have them. And we, this was more than a decade ago, I feel like we've created a lot of awareness in our community about the school supply issues. And so
it's craziness.
Well, now everybody and their mother's doing a drive. And it's you know, there's competition for stuff of buses, and there's competition even for who's going to take backpacks to a school to kids.
Yeah.
And so we said, okay, we've done our job. You know, we're still involved in school supplies, but on a smaller scale. But we said, how can we get to these kids and to these families to serve them more?
Right.
You know, if they can't afford a 25-cent notebook at back-to-school time.
Well, that's a symptom, not a cause.
Right. But what else is going on inside the house? And so over time, we started doing holiday stuff for kids, which is, it's our feel good kind of a thing.
Yeah.
It's not our primary mission. But now we've, started an intensive wraparound outreach in South Warren. We define South Warren as basically between 8 mile to 9.5. And then from, DeQuinder all the way over to Hayes.
Okay.
So we serve that entire area. And what we're doing now is we are DHHS navigation partners. So we're helping people get their DHHS benefits.
Which is?
Situated. Department of Health and Human Services.
Okay.
It used to be DHS, but the Department of Homeland Security has taken that acronym.
So yeah.
I have to get used to saying DHHS.
It's like the damn
World Wildlife people that took the wrestling WWE thing away from him.
Yeah, right. Yeah, exactly. Most people still call, you know, the welfare office. And so we're doing that kind of outreach. One of the things that we find, especially in South Warren right now, is we have a very high people living in extreme poverty. We have a very high child abuse and neglect rate. We have pretty high adult illiteracy. And so being able to come in and help a family, and I never say to get the benefits that they're entitled to, but to get the benefits that they qualify for. Because I don't, as much as I try to help people with their benefits, I don't buy into the whole entitlement mentality.
Right.
And I'll tell people.
It's just crazy when you see, like, we talk food insecure, and I don't think anybody realizes, like, that's a real thing.
In my area, you know? 1 in 5 kids are food insecure, which means when they go home, there's not a reliable source of food. So this is one of the things, you know, we're dealing with. We have, one of our better success stories is we had a family that was, the dad had a close head injury, and I'm not too still convinced on his own literacy skills, and he was making $733 a month on his disability, and they had him and three more kids, so four people in the house. The rent on the house was $700. The man couldn't read the DHHS paperwork to understand what he needed to send back, so he had no food stamps in the house. And so we were able to sit down and work with him, hand-holding, to do what needed to be done. So now we added $600-something in food stamps to the house, which was needed, you know. And then one of his kids had a disability. Well, he needed to do the disability paperwork, so we had to work on that, which was another, like, $700-something a month. So we took this family basically from $733 to something like $2,500 a month in coordinated benefits, which were deserved. You know, it wasn't like they were trying to milk the system. It's just nobody could read the paperwork.
Well, and I guess that's the question is, so how, and maybe this speaks to how much work you have to do in that area, how much of it is lack of interest in adoption versus lack of awareness?
In what way?
Like when it comes to benefits and things like that. I mean, like, so I mean, you know, when you find yourself in these situations, you know, I would assume there are some people that just don't want any kind of public assistance because it's a perceived thing. But then there are also probably people that just have no idea that it's out there.
I see everything. I see the pride that, you know, well, I don't want to take it. You know,
yeah.
I have a man who came in this past week. He was on public assistance before. And then he got a job, and for the last 6-7 years, he worked, supported his family, and now this shop closed, and he lost his job in some way, and he's waiting to the very last minute to come in and apply. Well, you know, he's coming in, they need food stamps, their utilities are in danger of getting cut, so we have to do all this work, which is what we do.
In a mad scramble.
But try to get, you know, and it's very much an intensive work, and it's truly crisis outreach. And I always say, you know, if people fit inside a nice box, they wouldn't be our clients.
Right.
You know, so we're always chasing everything that's outside of the box to try to coordinate help for families. One of the biggest things that I have found, and I've been down there as an intensive for just over a year now, which means
I was going to say that's part of this, and it's, you know, and we didn't really even touch on this yet. Is, you know, one of the reasons why we've felt really good about working with you guys is your organization has like the slimmest margin of anything, you know, as far as, you know, what comes in versus what goes out, to the point where you now live down there.
I live in the heart of it all, and it's. It's one thing to study poverty, which I did, and you get an idea of poverty. It's another thing to, okay, I'm going to live out here, but drive down here, work, and go back home. It's a whole different experience when you're living it and you're in the middle of it. Because, you know, I go into Shoppers Market to get my groceries, and there's people in there who want to talk to me about their cases. Like, you know what? No, my hair is a wreck. I'm buying my whiskey, and leave me alone. It's Sunday morning.
Oh, yeah. Well, you said you've had people that have come by the house at all hours of the day and night. And I mean, it's – you've seriously dedicated yourself to this.
Yeah, and in the beginning, I regretted it, and it's been a, it's been a learning curve. But that immersion really helped me get it and really understand, because I often say that when the streetlights come on, South Warren takes on a whole different life of its own. And I'm not talking the crime and the rest, because that happens even in the day. But just it's a whole different experience. You know, because here your next door neighbors, there are people a couple blocks over, you know, you're seeing them at 9, 10 o'clock at night, and they need something. You're right there. So it's been I've learned more by living there than any textbook can teach me.
I would imagine.
I didn't go in, and I've never gone into a situation where I said, you know, this is what the community needs. I just listened to the needs in the community and responded accordingly.
What a novel concept.
For me, it's novel because I used to be one of those people who was like, well, this is what they need because the textbook said this is what they need. You know, that's not always the case. We have, you know, a lot of people think of the people in South Warren as, you know, lazy. And, you know, that's not the case.
See, and I'll be honest, like up until, you know, we started talking about this kind of stuff, I wasn't even aware there was a South Warren, you know, from a designation standpoint.
I grew up in Warren. There's a South, yeah, 696 is the dividing line.
See,
yeah.
You know, he uses the ditch as a dividing line.
The moat, we called it.
The moat.
The moat. I say 9.5, but you see some pompous people.
Yeah, us 14 milers, you know.
Well, I'll be in conversations and people will say 696 is the new 8 mile, like on the regular.
Yeah, and that's true. I had a donor who lived at 11 mile in Hoover, which is Warren.
It's right by the Ritz, yeah.
Wanted to bring a donation and said, where are you located? We said, well, we're about 8.5 in Van Dyke. He says, I don't go into that area. Can you come and get the check for me?
Way to be committed.
2 miles away. Yeah, 2 miles away.
Dude, I'll meet you at the Ritz.
Yeah. So, I mean, but this is true. I mean, and there has been people, and I'm not going to call them out, but certain city officials who have been known on record to say that South Warren is dead and have asked me how I feel working in a morgue.
Jeez.
That is a dereliction of duty. If you are a city official of a place, and Warren is not a small municipality.
It's the third largest city in the state.
Yeah, it's the third largest city in the state. People forget that all the time. You know, that is a dereliction of duty, and that's disgusting to me. Because to me,
yeah, why are you, you know,
why are you even elected? Why are you doing that job?
Right.
Well, because I'm an elected official for north of 696.
But see, that's the – I could get started. I'll save it for segment 3. I could get 4. Oh, boy. Step away from
my – L. Brooks versus Duggan. So talk to me about this latest thing you've got going on, this whole 29-day house initiative. Because everything you do with the money that you get in blows my mind because you are incredibly resourceful with stuff. But when you were walking me through what the operational budget is on this, it's mind-boggling. I mean, it's crazy you can pull this off. But so what is this? What's going on?
Well, one of the things that I found is we do not have a lot of shelters in Macomb County. And the shelter beds we do have for homeless people, especially families, are very limited. And if you're a homeless family with multiple kids, trying to find a shelter with that amount of beds has been a challenge. And so oftentimes we have to put them up temporarily into a motel. And, you know, that can cost anywhere from $800 to $900 a month to put
right.
somebody in a motel room. And you're putting them inside a Sid's Hideaway bungalow. You know,
rooms by the hour. We'll leave the sheets on for you.
Well, I have one where they got to bring their own.
Stay classy, Warren.
Yeah. Yeah. But So they go into this room where somebody's chain smoked in that room for 50 years and there's only two queen beds and they can't cook in it. And maybe the small little refrigerator works or not. And that's expensive. And I don't like it, you know. And we're right now we have, for a variety of reasons, families becoming homeless, domestic violence. People who just screw up on their own.
See, and you don't like bills. You're not you don't hear that. I mean, because a lot of what you hear now is, oh, everything's getting better and the economy's turning around and the area is just so fantastic. So I mean, like a lot of these stories get even more lost.
Well, like last week, I got a case where the lady had to escape domestic violence. She had four kids. And they ran. They literally left the house at like 9-10 o'clock at night with whatever they had on. Two of the kids left without shoes, and they had to get the hell out of there, basically. And it was a challenge to try to get them into a place. We've had people who, yeah, they've got evicted on their own. You know, they didn't pay their bills for right. whatever reason. Not necessarily got of just because of poor spending, just because maybe something happened.
Yep.
You know, they had to fix the car. We also have the other challenge where, what, 3 years ago when the city of Warren did the tax sales, or the county did the tax sales, they packaged those up and these out-of-town investors bought up all these properties.
But that's a good thing, isn't it?
Yeah, it was good, but they didn't pay their property taxes for 3 years.
Mm.
And, well, this past October was the tax sale. So you've had tenants who have faithfully paid their rent every month. And now the house went into tax foreclosure. Now they're evicted.
Wow, this has so many echoes.
Yeah.
It's so many echoes. We are so similar in so many ways.
Yeah.
What's interesting that you say that something happens and they get evicted. They say that 56% of Americans live paycheck to paycheck with less than $1,000 in their bank account. And then 24% have less than $100 to their name.
Yeah.
So it could happen to anybody. And people are quick to blame, you know, things like drugs or, you know, bad choices, but it's not always that.
I'm not going to bitch about the car place having my car for 3 months anymore.
Well, hashtag first world problem.
Yeah, exactly. Well,
I don't know if it was Warren or South Warren, but there was something where it's got the seventh largest heroin usage in the nation.
Wow.
But the bulk of the people who I see who are becoming homeless or struggling, they're not users. Do I have users? I have users. In fact, I was telling you, Dave, yeah. about one of my ODs on Sunday morning.
Oh.
But it does happen. But it's such a small percentage. Just like the people who try to think that the majority of people on welfare are scammers.
Scamming, this is, yeah.
Well, we know that there's about a 3% fraud rate for welfare. And in that same fraud rate is even data entry errors that somebody, even the caseworker, you know, put something in wrong. So when you get down to it, they figure that it's probably just 1%.
But that's what everybody loves to talk about.
Well, because you, oh, yeah. The
10 tweets are news these days, Dave.
Yeah, exactly.
Come on.
But that 1% has some great stories that are newsworthy. But 90% of people who are who receive public assistance or food stamps are children, elderly, disabled, or working people. So they actually have jobs, but not enough to support themselves. It still meet the income limits for food stamps.
So then how is what you're doing translating into solving that housing problem for them?
Well, one of the things we're doing is by helping people get their benefits in order. So instead of having to take money for food, like out of their
that $33 that was left after rent. Yeah.
Now that money's able to the food budget's able to go towards other bills. You know, for every $5 in food stamps that we generate, we generate $9 in economic activity. Because see, in our area, we have people who they walk. They go to Shoppers Market, right?
Right.
And so now they're going to be buying more food at Shoppers Market. Shoppers Market's going to keep somebody employed, maybe pay
the
cashier
or have to bring somebody new in. Yeah.
And now you're buying more food from there, so they're going to have to use a supplier, which is going to help with the over the road people to bring food in and warehouses. And what I think for every $1 billion in food stamps, 3,300 farm jobs are created. Well, when I did the math, because I'm a numbers guy, just our work in South Warren alone has probably created 4 farm jobs this year.
Okay.
So it shows that even though we're here, we have a greater impact, you know,
right,
on the economy. So that's one positive out of all of this. Where we're at now is going back, we don't have enough shelter beds. And if a family's got to go into a motel, the money that they have in their pocket, now they're paying a motel to stay at.
Right.
So the 29-day house concept is where they come in, they could stay for free for that basically a month, but they could save up a down payment to be able to get in another place of their own.
Yeah, or a first month's rent, deposit, that sort of thing. Yep.
And we have landlords we can work with that would be willing to work with the people we serve, and different programs to help within that time. But right now, like this mom who had to leave the house with all the kids, she also left where she only had a small income left of her own because she was leaving the abusing spouse who had the bigger chunk of the money.
Right.
And you could say child support, but that's going to take forever.
Yeah.
That's not going to help her get housed right now. And so she was able to get into that house. It's better than the motel that, you know, chain smoking or that chain smoked room.
Right.
And so they're in a more cozy environment with 3 meals a day, which they're not getting at the motel. And it just really helps in the long run. We know that we could do that house for, it's about $12,000 a year, to get it together. With the other supports that would be coming in. And so as I was talking to you, I said, people, go get grants. And I've never been a fan, and I've always told you this, of corporate grants because they're sterile, they don't care, and sometimes you have to jump through hoops you don't want to have to jump through. So we divided by 365, and it came out to $33 a day. And so we said if we could find 365 people to each sponsor a day, we could pull this house off.
Okay, any of you out there listening, we've had more than 1,000 of you at our Majestic events. We've had more than 2,000 of you that have found jobs at our events. Listen carefully. Don't make me start nagging and hunting you down.
Neri just shot me a link to the worst, basically, drug cities in America. And for the worst cities for drug overdoses, Warren, Michigan is 7th in the country.
That's crazy.
Detroit and Flint are down the list a little bit, but Dayton, Ohio, number one.
Should be 3 in Ohio in the top 3, right?
Yeah, the Cincinnati, Dayton in the top 10, and Toledo in the top 10. Detroit looks like 12th-ish. Flint looks like 15, 20.
That's crazy. So $33 a day is basically what this boils down to.
Yeah.
To make this happen.
And people can pick a date, so if the date's available and you have a significant date you want to do an in memory of, an honor of,
all right,
you could say, okay, here's $33, and can I please have March 5th? And if it's available, you can have it. If not, I'll charge you $66 for it.
Got a premium dates, yeah.
Yeah, that's right. And for $99, we'll let you come clean the house.
You can have the holiday weekend.
Yeah, that's right.
No, just to put that in perspective, that's what I'm going to pay to Uber to Mark's place and back on Thursday.
Yeah.
And my God, you can take care of a family, or I can get drunk, or I can do both.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, we have the luxury of being able to do both.
Exactly. And for $66, we'll give you your own 5th.
No, oh, you will? Oh.
Paid for by Dave.
Ah, yeah.
There it is.
It's like PBS. Give $100 and we'll give you this DVD set of Flash Gordon from the 1930s.
Right. So, and I know for those that can't make it, we've got the link out in the Facebook event and on the blast that went out today. People can donate in advance. We do encourage people to do that. Hell, I mean, even if you are planning on making it, you know, you can do that and then not have to worry about, you know, cash donations and that kind of stuff. You are going to be on hand yes, with us Thursday night again. And yeah, I mean, the shit matters, people. I mean, I know this isn't us 101. Like, we don't really tend to get heavy, on topics very often, but like, this shit is right in our own backyard, and it's such an easy thing to help. I mean, it's literally, like, you know, Bob said, it's an Uber ride. It's not even one of our bar tabs on a bar crawl night at one bar. This absolutely is something that we should be able to help kick into high gear and at least get a year rolling on this.
And one of my biggest hopes, and I told you this, and I tend to dream big, but I also have faith, is hopefully we raise enough between now and Thursday to be able to announce the official opening on Thursday.
Yeah.
We do have the support of the local school district. We have, in fact, two or three of the people on the board are actually work somehow in the district, because that's where we get a lot of our families from, within the school district. It's just very important. And, you know, and one thing we have to remember is this isn't just a home for homeless people. They're always going to have children. So, you know, it's mainly going to be women and children.
Yeah.
From time to time, men do get custody, and I always wonder, wow, what does she do so
well? Yeah, it's not like the system is really geared that way. Yeah.
Yeah. It's like, whoa, you know? And sometimes I look, I was like, so the judge had to pick the lesser of the two, didn't he? <You know? laughs> You know, but the bulk of my people, you know, are good. The people we serve, they're well-meaning, and to be able to help them in any way, it's great.
Awesome. So yeah, we'll see everybody there Thursday night.
So yeah, how do we to the new thing? I know, like, we tried to go to what's the website now for to donate to the.
It's kind of a weird URL. I don't even want to try to give it out over the air, just because, I mean, it's a little kludgy. But I mean, like I said, it's on the Facebook event listing. You can find it on itandthed.com in the mail blast that we did out. Yeah, because I mean, it's you know, ubm.wildapricot.org/page.
We'll put it on the Twitters and the things, yeah, and the places, yeah, and
so
the,
yeah,
stuff.
I mean, so it's out there.
Our technology budget is very weak.
So. Right. Which I feel like we should be able to do something with and make that easier to get to.
Yeah, exactly.
I think we may do that before the end
of
the
night. We know a couple IT guys, yeah. Michael.
You think?
Yeah, exactly. Michael, appreciate spending time with us. Look forward to seeing you on Thursday. And we'll be back with Dr. Hook and Sven from Daily Detroit. This is the IT in the D Show, and we'll be right back.
IT in the D. Read. Meet. Listen. Networking Detroit. One beer at a time.
Hey guys, it's Timog, Bruce Leroy from The Last Dragon. You're listening to the IT and D Show.
ITinTheD.com.
This is a previously recorded episode of the IT and the D Show.
Welcome back to segment four. We haven't done segment four in a while. Episode 174 of the IT and the D Show, broadcasting here in Podcast Detroit. Bob the Sales Guy hanging out with David Geek, Nuri the FNG. Go to itandthed.com and just go there.
Just do it.
Yeah, do it.
Do it now. So, yeah, Jared, now that we've given you several story ideas tonight, how's everything going?
It's going great. Let me tell you, this podcast is a pillar of the community.
Yeah. I'm now having flashbacks to the very first time you and I went to MEDC to Shifting Gears to do our, you know, yuck yuck 10 commandments of networking shtick, and the speaker that was on right in front of us told a half hour long story about his wife who died of cancer.
Wow.
And the long lingering death, and Bob and I in the bathroom going, hey, come on.
Well, as soon as we go to break, I'm like, all right, kids, who wants to buy a Tesla? Oh, God. Like,
yeah, totally. But you know what? These are things that are really important to talk about. This is a facet of the region that I think personally is swept under the rug. I think there's a lot of people who think, oh, Detroit, over there.
Well,
over there, those people.
Well,
when
not
in
only
fact,
that.
It's our people.
Well, yeah. Not only
as a
that,
region.
But like I said, I mean, you know, a lot of the stories you hear are the economy is getting better, everything's great, house prices are going up, and everything's all shiny, happy, hunky dory, fluffy clouds. Not so much.
Yeah, well, and Macomb County has certainly been in the news a lot lately, too. I mean, with the election and, you know, swinging the vote for Donald Trump. I mean, there was a story the other day that there was a pollster who said Macomb was one of five counties in the United States. The other four were in Florida that basically turn the election in Donald Trump's favor. So there's been a lot of stories about Macomb County, but not like this. I mean,
yeah, stories, but not true stories. I think the only group that has really gotten a pulse on it was that Humans of New York that just came, that yeah. Brandon Stanton who just came through. I mean, he did a great job really showing these stories on the ground in a way that's what people want to hear. That's what people need to hear, is for us to give the mic to other folks so that they can actually share their experiences and what's happening, because it's not one story. It's just like people like to say there's two Detroits. There's so many narratives in Detroit City. There's so many narratives in the Detroit region.
Macomb County goes all the way from 8 Mile to Armada. Yeah.
It's gigantic.
It's not a – we're not talking not about like 3 square miles. This is – yeah. The disparity of just human beings is the whole entire probably dichotomy of humanity.
That should be their logo for the Chamber of Commerce, the disparity of human beings.
Yeah.
I mean, I haven't fact checked this, but I got to think there's some countries in Europe that are smaller in land area.
Luxembourg. Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
You know, but Rhode Island's that big. I don't right.
Vermont. Yeah.
Connecticut.
There's only 600,000 people in Vermont, for crying out loud.
But we talk about the economy getting better, and yeah, okay, that's true. I get it. Whatever. But for the people, especially in South Warren, it's going to take them a lot longer to see that recovery. So while everybody else is doing better, it's going to take longer, and I see that now. And you know, we have 4 libraries and not 1 adult literacy program.
Wow.
And so if you want to go for adult literacy, you either have to go basically out to Hall Road to Macomb. Right.
If only there was a regional transit system
that
could enable that.
Wait a minute. Okay. We're willing to vote against their own interests here.
So right. But
because the people in Macomb. But
get this. I got to tell you, this is what I find hilarious. Or they can go down at the Detroit, and I can't think of the name of the program there.
Focus Hope, probably.
No, but I think it's Dominican, but I'm not sure. People in South Florida are like, no, we're not going in that neighborhood.
Nice. Yeah.
But there's nothing there. And if I have that high of a illiteracy rate or a low to no reading rate, I mean, I worked with a woman today who came in for assistance, and I was like, what was your highest grade completed? She said 8th grade.
Well, in this world, in this technology, world of technology, that's just not going to cut it. It's changed, bottom line. Things have changed. What you need for a well-paying job has changed.
Well, we have this conversation about Detroit all the time. You know, just in our chats and all that kind of stuff about, you know, all right, yay, you know, so they're going to build the new Wings Arena and they're going to hire 50%. You know, are all going to be Detroit residents? Okay, that all sounds great. But
then I chime in.
Well, then they figure out that they don't have enough people that have the skills in the city of Detroit to actually fill that number that they said they'd fill.
No, that's ridiculous. I always say it's ridiculous. It's like that new GKN automotive plant's going in Auburn Hills. I hope 50% of the people that build a plant are of Auburn Hills residents. Like, Detroit's one of the weirdest cities in the country. I never hear these conversations in my whole entire U.S. travels, except for the ones here. And it's so goofy. These goofy walls we put up and build and talk, these crappy talking points, makes no sense to me.
I mean, across the board, right? Like the goofy walls we put up and the provincialism has been shooting us down over and over again. The story we ran over the weekend, Google did a great project that basically showed 32 years of history from satellite views of the world, right?
It's like a time lapse.
Yeah, it's like it's Google time lapse. Thank you. And what was fascinating was how much got built up around our entire region, but we lost population. We lost population. So almost every other region in the country.
Now, we being Detroit?
Metro Detroit.
Okay.
The Metro Detroit region as a whole lost population over the last 30 years, and yet we sprawled out mile after mile after mile, cannibalizing our own neighborhoods, cannibalizing our services, and just spreading it out more and more where, you know, it just doesn't make any sense. And we wonder why, you know, there's these huge gaps where people don't have literacy services, or these huge gaps.
But they did that in every – like you look at the Midwest. They did it in
Chicago.
No, in Indianapolis, everyone went out to Carmel. In Chicago, everyone went out to Schaumburg.
The difference being is they actually increased in population. The difference being is they almost doubled – most of the places almost doubled population. Look at Chicagoland, the Chicagoland area. But Metro Detroit stayed the same. So they sprawl because they grew people.
They can have their own traffic though because that sucks ass.
Yeah, because 75 getting in and out of the city is just a dream.
No, go to Chicago.
True. Yeah.
You go on Sunday at noon and there's a – yeah, no. I wouldn't wish that on anybody.
But I mean, that's the thing though, is that we think we're special in so many ways, but we're special in ways that we don't realize that in some ways our policies have been shooting ourselves in the foot. And what we need to do is start changing our view of things and looking at it as like, how can we work together to push things forward? More so than the cross-border fights that still happen to this day.
Chair, you guys are fighting in-border. If somebody moves in and someone's been there for a year, no, you're not Detroit enough. You're moving in. You're ruining my neighborhood. The infighting in Detroit, it's so – if someone moved in down the street from me, I'd buy him a beer and say, welcome to the hood. Where are you from?
I think
– like in Detroit, like, suburbians moving in.
Well, in South Miami, get your heroin.
Oh, yeah, exactly. Hey.
Here's your needle.
I think that conversation, though, is distorted by a few voices because my
experience – They're loud, though.
They're loud. But you know what? My experience living in the city – and you lived in the city for a while as well. It was welcoming as hell.
Yeah.
And nobody did that in real life.
I was going to say, Nuri
just moved in.
Nuri's our first-hand expert here.
The best experience ever. My neighbor, Mark.
You're in a – yeah, never mind. Go ahead.
Yeah, you're out in the university district.
I'm in the university district, right. So my neighbor, Mark, comes over. He's like, Nuri, I just want to tell you that I have never had a neighbor as good as you. You and your crew, referencing my roommates and friends, are truly good people. And it's because I look out for them. They look out for me. Like the other night, it was 2 in the morning. I had my window cracked. I heard something. I heard the chain link fence. And I look out. I'm like, what the hell's going on outside?
Well, those loud.
And Mark is like, it's just me, Nuri. I'm like, oh, just keep an eye on your place. And we were talking yesterday about how Detroit's changing. He was telling me about he went to a hot yoga studio. And he says how he and his wife are so happy.
They both farted.
At the things that are going on in Detroit. And I was like, this is so different than what I expected.
The reality is the loud voices are often connected to political forces that were part of the previous Kwame regime. That is the reality. The reality in Detroit is, yes, there are real issues of gentrification and all those things. But when you talk about this anger, this kind of like frivolous anger when we're not really dealing with the core issues, that's something where people – I mean the demographics of Detroit have changed so much. You had nearly somewhere between 40 and 50,000 African American people leave the city in the last 10, 15 years, and then you had about 10,000 white folks move in. So although, you know, only about 10,000, you know, there's been so much shift in the situation because you had one population drop off, move to Southfield, move to, you know, different suburbs, things like that. And then so it's distorted. The change is distorted visually in what's been happening in Detroit.
And well, you know, there's always people out there counting. So, yeah.
It's true.
counting on what?
People. Well, and that actually fits in with another conversation we always have, Jer, which is that changing face of media. You know, this is one of those things, you know, whether it's, you know, us, what we're doing here, you, what you're doing with DailyDetroit.com. It's weird watching news evolve.
And in very fast real time.
It's evolving rapidly.
Or devolving, really. I mean, because the fabric of the news media, I mean, you know, we were talking before, you know, say what you want to say about the news media. A lot of people like, you know, it's people's favorite pastime, right, is to bitch about the news media. But it's important, and I think we're finding out, and we're going to find out increasingly because it's disintegrating, you know, as we –
Because they went after clickety-clicks and they lost their trust.
But they followed give the people what they want.
Sure.
That's
sure.
Right.
That's Anchorman 2, man.
They're selling page clicks. Yeah. And that's what people are clicking on is you know, stories that in the long run don't really matter. And now you've got like fake news as like this – weird competitor and
in-depth expose of a political insidery. Whatever, you know? Nothing. Poop water. All the clicks.
Oh, my God. Yeah. No, I sent a link today and Nuri's like, no, it's satire. And I go, I remember when satire was just the Onion. Like, I can't just – I don't know what's what now. It's like Merriam-Webster classifies the word of the year as F-17-U-C-K. And I go, I don't – last year it was like – whatever the stupid word, YOLO.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I think it, you know, I see it on Reddit. I figure it's a word. And he's like, no, it's satire. Well, I don't know.
That's why personal relationships, I think, are more and more important. You know, I think it's important to be out there and visible and talking to folks and doing things, you know, doing things like what we did over at the Daily Detroit Happy Hour last month, where we've packed Queens with more than 60 people, just getting, you know, admittedly totally ripping off part of your model. But like
good with that.
But the idea being is that you meet people and that you can build trust, and you get to know what you get to learn what you're good at and what you're not good at. And I mean, I think Sven, you give a lot of perspective because you have quite the bona fides over the years of like working in the field as like the journalist with a J.
It's true. I mean, and you know, so, and I'm a refugee of the business. I mean, I always remember a conversation I had with a mentor when I was losing one of my jobs. He said, "Well, you know, you have two options here. You could basically get another journalism job, which would be like jumping from one melting iceberg to another, or you could go do something else that's more stable." And that's the route I took.
I mean, part of the point of Daily Detroit is to somehow find something that actually works and start to rebuild it. I mean, because it's not going to look like it did. It's not.
It can't.
It can't.
Well, it's failing. I mean, like Detroit, I mean, we were talking about that before. It's failing. We can't do the same thing that we did before.
Well, yeah. I mean, you've got buyouts, you know, happening at, you know,
both major papers.
Freep and Debt News.
Yeah. Well, someone just said the other day, like, hey, you know, it used to be the news on the front page, editorials in the back. Now it's editorials on the front page.
Yeah.
You know, it's –
yeah, because clickety clicks.
Yeah, the news and clickety clicks. And oh, by the way, oh, we messed up retraction on Monday on page
column four.
Well, one of the big changes is that so much of the traffic is driven through Facebook, and Facebook shares by affinity. So if you have a serious story that doesn't have a lot of emotional reaction, or if it does and you might feel weird about sharing it amongst your friends, it's not going to gain a lot of traction.
But that's why they put poop water in headlines.
Exactly. Well, because it's that affinity, it's that social emotion. That and Facebook's like, not designed for –
Well, it's like Starbucks Cup. Starbucks Cup. Last year it was one guy. This year it was 10 tweets. And you'd think that by the way it got shared that it was like millions and millions of people are like boycotting Starbucks, when in fact it was 10 tweets, which became a BuzzFeed viral. Yeah. It's laughable how this stuff picks up steam and runs.
Well, on the Facebook thing, I mean, I'm – you know,
the CNN porn story.
Yeah, totally.
One tweet.
Yeah.
One.
Yeah. I mean, I know this is IT and the D, but I actually – I still subscribe to a Sunday newspaper. I get it. I know. Crazy. I'm so
old. You're the one.
But the amazing thing to me is the experience, like the readership experience, is completely different from digital. I mean, when I sit down, you know, I don't always have a lot of time to do it, granted. But when I sit down to read the paper, I can lose myself for a couple of hours easily. Whereas online, I mean, you never do that. You read one story off of Facebook or wherever you
– headline, first three words, done.
You read it, you're done. You click
people
away.
Don't do
no, you read the comments
words.
More than you
they
read the article.
Don't.
Yeah. You get into the comments more than you read the article.
I don't, but some people do, for sure, yeah. I mean, occasionally if I – you know, if they're not horrible and toxic, I will –
They're all horrible and toxic. That's why we wanted to see them.
Occasionally you find good ones.
Yeah, we nixed our comment section because of the horrible and toxicness. Yeah. But like,
now you just get them via email.
Yeah, I just get slews of angry emails now. But like we ran a feature story around a Detroit charter school. You know, it's like a 2,000-word piece over, you know, because we try to run one Sunday feature every week.
Yep.
But, you know, you look at the data and even if you give a beautifully written piece, you look at the data and you can see 300-400 words. If they're on a phone, you know, they start to like drift off. Because it's just not the and the other thing I think that's changed is that the newspapers used to be the platform. Now Facebook is NBC, Snapchat is ABC, Instagram is CBS. Those are your networks, and you're producing content for the almighty algorithm that's deciding these things. Whereas in the old days, you know, that paper that you read is a bundle. It's a bundled experience where you get a little bit of this, a little bit of that. Now Facebook is that bundle, and same with all that other stuff. So in order to create a successful model for the future, you have to accept that the future is here and play by those rules, because you can't change them. I would love to. I miss all those things and enjoy them and all that other stuff. But in order to save it, you got to burn it down.
Yeah. But I mean, the one thing I'll say about, you know, going back to Friedman News, you know, doing buyouts and everything is Detroit is a hell of a news town, and it punches above its weight in terms of, you know, the size of our city. And I mean, we generate headlines globally, you know, you know, there's the auto industry here. I mean, you've always had, you know, in sensational crime stories. There's the story about Detroit's comeback now, which is pretty incredible. You know, we got four major sports teams. You know, you go on down the line. We need a vigorous press, and the politics here too, of course. I mean, you know, we need people covering Mayor Duggan's administration. The dissolution of the local news media is not a good thing. I mean, and you're talking about these papers have been institutions here for 100 and whatever years, 30, 40, 50 years. It's going to leave a mark.
We don't as someone who I consider myself at this point in my life apolitical, like I don't care what you think. I just want to see what's going on.
Yeah.
I can't be the only one. The only news that I will watch right now is Vice News on HBO. It's a half an hour, and it tells me what's going on, and I don't care what you think about it. Just tell me what's going on. I'm smart enough to form my own opinion.
Right, right.
Or at least
which is the old-fashioned way of doing it. And, right. You know, I mean, a lot of outlets are getting away from that now, and there's a whole argument about, well, maybe we should be just, you know, going in the direction of, like, Fox News or MSNBC and more partisan.
No, because all they're doing is telling people what they want to hear. I don't need a Bill O'Reilly or a Rachel Maddow or anybody in between.
Everybody has the chance to share their opinion. Opinions have become the commodity. Facts, I think, are, you know, it used to be facts were everywhere.
Give me my numbers and let me form my own opinion.
I mean, that's one of the reasons why we've moved over the last few months to, if there's an opinion piece, we slap opinion in the first thing. Yeah. And, you know, we try to limit it to once a week or once every 2 weeks on something that's a big deal that we think is important to view. Outside of that, it's like, let's get back to the basics. And sometimes we deliver it in a short form, sometimes whatever, but you got to get to that. You got to win that trust back.
It's gone.
Yeah. I mean, why has that trust been, you know, where's it gone? I mean, and why has it gone? I mean, there's been this steady attack for, you know, decades.
I still blame CNN.
No,
about
they were first. Well, no, it goes back to
the media has got a liberal bias or whatever. I mean,
then you have Fox, which is Republican, and then everybody's like, well, that's fake news because it doesn't think like me. And then
once you went to a 24-hour news cycle, you had to start inventing shit.
Yeah, I think that was
to fill up that space, and that's where it all started.
You used to get it all in an hour,
right?
Well, and I mean, I know you hate this word, but curation, it matters.
Can you pivot from curation?
And change a paradigm or two?
Yeah.
But why – so for us, we look at it as why run an AP Wire story? Because we will never cover Syria better than one of the national outlets will. But we're going to cover the hell out of Metro Detroit.
Right.
Forget the wire services. Throw out the junk. You know, yeah, we have fluff pieces. Yeah, we have stuff that's entertaining. People love it. That's part of it too, right? You talk about fun stuff. You talk about serious stuff. But have a true local focus on what's going on. And I think –
hey, those best five hamburger pieces are important, Chair. Don't sell yourself short.
Hey, you know what? it'll blow your mind. You put 36,000 people will come through in a week.
I know.
Was it Dickie's opening in Sterling Heights?
I know. And
that caught fire?
Yeah, that caught fire. I'm like, wow, all right. Well, I mean – but that stuff's part of the community, right? So part of a community conversation is that. It's all those facets.
They need a whole story on Bad Brad's pig candy.
Yes.
You keep telling me about this.
I figured that out at home.
Did you?
Oh, yeah.
Oh.
I'll tell about it.
Ooh. Yeah, you've been telling me about this, and this could be a revolution in the barbecue world.
if Bad Brad's opened up in Corktown, it would be all the rage.
Isn't it funny how sometimes, like, places create stories out of things that maybe aren't as great as they would, you know what I mean?
Well, it's because we've talked about it. Like, you know, this is the opposite of what we usually go into, which is, oh my God, you know, you take that place out of Corktown and put it in the suburbs, crickets, you know, but, you know, this place in the suburbs, crickets, you put it downtown, it'll annihilate everybody.
And you take the Outback from Hall Road and put it in Corktown and it's toilet.
Yeah.
but
that would be terrible.
There's an hour wait on Saturday night because you can't get in a restaurant on Rochester Road or on Hall Road to save your life. You know.
That'd be pretty funny to see an Outback open up on Michigan Avenue.
Would Applebee's, would there be a parade like there was for Applebee's? I think there would be.
That Applebee's on 8 Mile by the Mire, you know, 8 Mile and Woodward.
No, we know it very well.
It's that parking lot. I live near there, and that parking lot is packed all the time.
You should go to DetroitApplebee's.com. Just point that out.
They own it.
Yeah.
Really?
We don't. Someone did.
Someone did. There may or may not be a story of us in
Applebee's Detroit t-shirts that we made up on opening day.
The picture's in the lobby if you want to see it.
Yeah, exactly.
See, the pictures
there's a great story there. All right, so hey, let's wrap this up and bring this to a close. JR Sven, where do we find you guys at?
DailyDetroit.com. And on the Facebook, let's look for Daily Detroit.
Okay. And Michael, we already said we're going to find you a much better URL to get this done. I'll probably do that before I go to sleep tonight. and then Mark, we find you?
FallingDownBeard.com.
Awesome.
Like to thank our sponsors tonight, Indeed Prime and VMware, the podcast. On behalf of Bob and David Nuri,
you lost me with that syllabulum phasis. What was
podcast?
That?
On behalf of myself, Bob, David Nuri, we look forward to seeing you at December 8th at Falling Down Brewery. Just do us all a favor, drink up a drink, get your phone numbers. You don't got to go home. You just got to get the hell out of here. See you next week. Beat it.
The emergency destruct system is now activated.
Conan, what is best in life? To crush your enemies, see them driven before you, and to hear the lamentation of the women.
Long live Flash! You've saved your life. Have a nice day.
I have come here to chew bubblegum and kick ass. And I'm all out of bubblegum.
Nice shooting, son. What's your name?
Murphy. Make the run. The run.
Game over, man. Game over.
It's over, Johnny. It's over.
Nothing is over. Nothing. You just don't turn it off.
I can't say no, and I don't really want to, so.
Well, especially with the back doors open.
Yo, hold up. Time out. Time out. Y'all take a chill. You need to cool that shit out. And that's the double truth, Ruth.
Bob loves it in the can.
I hope this was as much fun for you as it was for me.
That's why I like it in a can.
Joe, own the truth. Owns. 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 Owns.
Fear me.
My job is to make sure this program is morally upright and cultural and wholesome.
Shut up, Mimsy! Shut up, Mimsy! Shut up, Mimsy!
Why would, like, Buick put their cars next to, like, the Bentleys? Like, why? That's not marketing.
The alphabet. It's brilliant.
Yeah, I can't take that position.
That analogy sucks because it's right.
Because you're getting your 8-track tuned up.
Are we at a break yet? Yeah, so now I'm just like doing like stupid stuff to make me laugh.
Venture capital is not the end game.
When are we going to talk about me?
Jane, you ignorant slut.
It's my show. I can say what I want. Yeah.
Kiss my ass, go home, unplug, get off the goddamn internet. You are everything that is wrong with the internet right now.
You're so white right now.
I'm the whitest guy in the room. Just explain it to me.
Show now!
I love this city. I was banging on the wang.
Really? Should we talk about the tag team? Should I keep going or should I stop?
Can I just say, it's been great being on a show that talks about Mickey Rooney dying for 20 seconds and then poop for 10 minutes.
This is a previously recorded episode of the IT and the D Show.